That's my back row barometer. Are y'all comfortable? Yeah, Russell is my back row barometer here. Okay, so we might need to turn it down a touch. It's hard to get it right because up here is hotter than back there, so we're trying to get the balance there. Well, folks, when I was ushering earlier today, I was saying, I hope I hadn't chased people away. Thank you for being with us today. Please turn to the Gospel of John. The Gospel of John, as we continue in our series that I call According to John, and we're making a good progress, and we're in the middle of a section that I've entitled The Passion of the Christ, because that's what the scholars call this area of chapters 18 and 19, the Passion of the Christ. And today we're coming forward. Last week we looked at the arrest of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane and the reaction of Peter. We saw how Peter followed Jesus as Jesus was led into Jerusalem and taken to the house of Annas. Annas was the former high priest, and he was the local power broker of that day. And we looked at how Peter sat in the courtyard of Annas, warming himself by a fire. But as he was doing that, he was also hanging around the temple police who had just arrested Jesus. And he was kind of in a difficult situation. And we noted that he stayed there. And so that showed some loyalty. But then he also showed some cowardice, because he was challenged as being a disciple of Jesus. And as we read last week, he denied being a disciple of Jesus. He even denied ever knowing Jesus. Not one time, but three times. We saw that 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a loud trumpet blast, changing of the Roman guard at the Castle Antonio, which was nearby. And that trumpet blast had the nickname of the cockcrow. And when Peter heard that sound, Jesus looked down at Peter. Peter glanced up at Jesus, and their eyes met, and Peter realized he had just denied Jesus for the third time. And Peter ran out, left the courtyard, ran into the streets of Jerusalem, humiliated, broken, filled with guilt and shame. He was sure that his discipleship of Jesus was over with. He didn't think Jesus could ever forgive him and that the other disciples would ever trust him. But as we ended our message, we focused on the fact that God wasn't finished with Peter yet. His story wasn't over. And just as that was true for him back then, it's also true for us today. Our story is not over yet either. God is not finished with us either. And it doesn't matter if we've made mistakes, because we all do. And it doesn't matter that we are not worthy, because none of us are. God is in the business of transforming failures into trophies of grace. Well, today we move on in our story, the Passion of the Christ, and we come to the civil trial of Jesus. John the Apostle doesn't record all of the events of the religious trial, but basically there were three steps of that. As we just said, Jesus was taken to the house of Annas. He was questioned there. Then he went next door to the house of Caiaphas, who was the current high priest, and he was questioned by Caiaphas and a few other priests who Caiaphas had managed to recruit to be there very early in the morning. Remember, I said it's 3 o'clock in the morning when they moved him. And then at daybreak, the Sanhedrin was called into an emergency meeting, and they had a very quick meeting. They asked Jesus a couple of questions, they ridiculed him, and they took a quick vote to condemn him. Interestingly, they had to meet in the daytime because under Jewish law, they could not meet at night. So they waited for the sun to rise above the horizon before they took the vote. And after they took the vote, they were ready for him to die. But because they were under Roman rule as a nation, they couldn't carry out the sentence. They had to present Jesus before Pilate, the Roman governor. They had condemned Jesus for blasphemy, but that's not a charge the Romans would care about. So they had to change it. They had to get a new political angle. So they came up with something politically correct. They charged Jesus with insurrection. Insurrection was something the Romans would be very concerned about. You see, the Romans were there to control the people, to keep everything in order, and to collect taxes for Rome. So the high priest and the priests of the Sanhedrin manufactured this false charge of insurrection, and that's what they brought to Pilate. Now, normally, Pilate wouldn't even be there. Pilate's headquarters was 100 miles away on the coast of the Mediterranean in a city called Caesarea. But during the religious feasts, when patriotic passion was high among the Jews, Pilate would move his troops down and stay in Jerusalem just to keep a suspicious eye on everybody, make sure no trouble arose. And they were very concerned about that because you might remember I told you there were hundreds of thousands of Jews that would come to Jerusalem during Passover. The Romans never had a full legion of troops. They never had more than 6,000 men. They were outnumbered greatly. They couldn't afford for any trouble to pop up because they'd be beaten. So they were pretty ruthless in controlling trouble. But Pilate's there. His men are there. And that's where they take Jesus to Castle Antonia, which is next door to the temple, Pilate's residence. So let's begin in chapter 18, verses 28 through 32. I call Pilate met Jesus. Then they led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas to the governor's headquarters. It was early morning. They themselves did not enter the governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled, but could eat the Passover. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered him, "If this man were not an evildoer, was not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and judge him by your own law." The Jews said to him, "It's not lawful for us to put anyone to death." This was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken, by what kind of death he was going to die. The high priest and the other priests take Jesus to Pilate's headquarters there at Castle Antonia, but they stayed in his courtyard. They wouldn't go into his house. They wouldn't enter the residence because to enter the residence of a Gentile made a Jew ceremonially unclean for one day. And this was a special day. This was Friday, the day of preparation for the Passover. Now you might remember, and I won't spend long on this, but you might remember that I covered why Jesus was crucified on the day of preparation for the Passover, and yet he ate the Passover that night before on Thursday night. And the reason is very simple. Galilean Jews had a different calendar from Judean Jews. 15 Nisan, the date of the Passover, was counted differently. What had happened over the centuries was simply this. Galilean Jews were surrounded by Gentiles, and they were farmers. And over time, they began to measure days from sunrise to sunrise, just like we do. Judean Jews, where the temple was, they kept to the traditional Jewish method of measuring days from sunset to sunset. So 15 Nisan to the Galilean Jews started on Thursday night at sunset until the next day. 15 Nisan for the Judean Jews started on Friday night at sunset and then went to Saturday. Does that make sense? They measured time differently, and so they actually ate their Passover meals differently. That actually wound up helping the temple because they had to slaughter so many lambs. You might remember I said in one census that was taken in history, there was over 250,000 lambs slaughtered on one Passover week. It's recorded by Josephus. So it gave more time for the priest to slaughter the Passover lambs. So Jesus has eaten his Passover meal with his Galilean Jews, but the Judean Jews are about to, and that means that these Judean Jews, these priests, they don't want to be defiled because then they can't eat the Friday night meal. And so they stay outside in the courtyard. And isn't it interesting? They're so concerned about observing a little technical thing to keep their bodies clean when all the while their hearts are full of hatred. Majoring on the minors when there's a major thing wrong. Well, Pilate had never met Jesus. He certainly heard of Jesus. In fact, as we studied last week, he authorized some of his soldiers to go help arrest Jesus. But he never met him. And so when Jesus is presented to Pilate, Jesus asked the group, he says, "Well, what accusation do you bring against this man? Why is he here?" And they kind of get irritated at that. They just assumed that Pilate was just going to give it a big old okay to what they wanted. "Pilate, you're not supposed to have your own trial. We had the trial. You're just supposed to pronounce sentence. If he weren't a criminal, we would have handed him over to you." Pilate said, "Take him yourselves and handle this yourself. I'm not interested in any religious squabble by you guys. Now, let me give you a little bit of background. You know, I love history. And sometimes history paints the context. Pilate did not have a good relationship with the Jewish leaders. And it came about because mainly for three events. When Pilate was an ambitious guy. He married the granddaughter of Caesar Augustus. And he was an ambitious guy in Rome. And he managed to get himself appointed by Caesar Tiberius, who's the current emperor, the current Caesar. He managed to get himself appointed as prefect of Judea. And when he came there, first thing he did was march his troops into Jerusalem, showing off. I'm your new governor. I'm your new prefect, or, you know, procurator. I can't say the word. Your governor. Procurator. Well, the troops normally carried standards that had a bust of a reigning emperor on the standard, in this case, Tiberius. Now, in Roman rule, whoever the Caesar was considered a god. And so the Romans, they didn't think anything of that. Our current Caesar's, you know, he's considered the spirit of Rome. He's considered a god. Well, the Jews didn't want that. And they asked Pilate, have your troops remove that standard, that bust of Tiberius, because you consider him a god. Caesar said, no way. I'm your new governor. I'm in charge. I do what I want to. Well, he went back to Caesarea, and the Jewish priests followed him there. And they begged him, and they begged him. They said, remove that standard. Don't come into Jerusalem with that standard of a god. And he said, if you guys don't shut up, I'm going to kill every one of you. And they actually bared their necks and said, all right, kill us now. And even Pilate wasn't ruthless enough to do that. So reluctantly, he agreed. And from that point forward, when his troops would come for a feast to guard Jerusalem, they didn't have that standard. That was his beginning. And it was a bad beginning. Later on, Pilate did something that he thought was pretty practical. You see, the water supply in Jerusalem was not adequate. Remember, during feasts, thousands and thousands of people would show up, flood the city. So he knew that they needed to build an aqueduct. Well, where did he get the money to build that aqueduct? He had his soldiers raid the temple treasury. They stole the money from the temple. Now, it was a project for Jerusalem. It was a project for the Jews. It was a worthwhile project, but they took Jewish money in the Jewish temple to pay for it. That made the Jews very angry and just about created a riot. And Pilate ordered his soldiers to dress in plain clothes, sort of like a plain clothes detective, mingle in the crowd, and at a given signal, pull out your sword and kill everybody in sight. And that's exactly what they did. They murdered, killed, executed a bunch of people in the street. Well, that quieted down the situation, but it made Pilate a hated man in Israel. That was the second thing. Then there was a third thing. Pilate had some shields made in honor of Caesar Tiberius, the current Caesar. These were called votive shields because they were devoted to the emperor. He had them placed in the old palace of Herod the Great, the guy who's in the Christmas story. That palace was still there. He had them placed there as a symbol of his allegiance to Caesar. And once again, Tiberius, his image was considered to be the image of a god by the Jews. Same idea. So they asked Pilate, get rid of those shields. Don't put those in Jerusalem. Put them in Caesarea where you are. Do something else. Pilate refused. Well, this time the Jews sent a delegation all the way across the Mediterranean to Italy to appear before Caesar Tiberius and tell him what was going on and tell him what a lousy job Pilate was doing. And they got Caesar to send word back by emissary, remove the shields. So reluctantly, Pilate had to do that. And he was mad. Those Jews made him look bad in front of his boss. And he knew that Caesar Tiberius is sort of a ruthless guy. I don't need to look bad before him again. Does that make sense? You boys got me in trouble. I'm not much agreeable to work with you again. So, I said all of that to explain. Jesus is brought before Pilate. Pilate doesn't want to cooperate with the Jews. And they say, well, we want to crucify him. We can't, we want him dead. And Pilate, he's not very agreeable. But he does meet Jesus. And it's interesting, Pilate, as governor, he's been governor for about 9 years now, as governor, He has dealt with people who are insurrectionists before. He has dealt with people who are revolutionaries, who are zealots. You know, we get that word zealot from the Jewish guerrilla force that fought against the Romans. He dealt with that. And here's this guy that Jesus presented to him who's calm, who's not showing anger, who's not showing hatred. Pilate doesn't see that this man is really a threat. And the Jews say, we want to kill him. But we can't do it because you Romans won't let us execute anybody. And they didn't. They didn't. Only the Romans could use the power of the sword. Now, there would have come a time later on in the book of Acts when Pilate, the governor, would be back in Caesarea and Stephen would be preaching to the people and they would have a mob action and they would stone Stephen to death. And they got away with that because the governor wasn't there. But technically, only the Romans could execute someone. Did you know that that actually would fulfill a prophecy? Because the Jews used execution by stoning someone who's down on the ground. But Jesus said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men to myself. And that's exactly what would happen. He would be lifted up on the cross. So without knowing it, the Jews were fulfilling a prophecy. So Pilate met Jesus. Let's move on to Pilate questioned Jesus, verses 33 and following. This is kind of a long section, so hang with me. So Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? And in the Greek, that word you is very pronounced. Are you the king of the Jews? Jesus answered, do you say this of your own accord, or did others tell you about me? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? Your own nation and chief priests have delivered you over to me. What have you done? Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world. Then Pilate said to him, so you are a king. Jesus answered, you say that I'm a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Pilate said to him, what is truth? After he had said this, he went back outside to the Jews and told them, I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I should release one man for you at the Passover. So do you want me to release to you the king of the Jews? They cried out again, not this man, but Barabbas. Now, Barabbas was a robber. Pilate summoned Jesus into his headquarters. He sized him up. Jesus was calm, showed no sign of anger. Pilate, who was used to dealing with insurrectionists, he didn't know what to make of this. The guys he had dealt with before always had hatred for Rome, always had anger in their voice. Yet this fellow Jesus had a different spirit. Pilate had certainly heard the Jewish leaders make the accusation that this man was claiming to be a king, leading an insurrection against Rome. That was the charge. So he asked them, and again in the Greek, this is very, very pronounced. Are you? Come on, not you. You don't look like much like a king. Are you the king of the Jews? And Jesus' answer kind of puzzled him. Jesus said, do you say this of your own accord, or did others tell you about me? Now, what he was saying is simply this. It all depends on how you ask him the question. If it's from a Roman perspective, then no. I'm not here to oppose Rome, to lead a revolution, to lead a revolt. That's not me. But if it's from a Jewish perspective, then yes, I am the king. I am the descendant of David. I am the king of Israel. Depends on how you're asking the question. Pilate just gave an arrogant response. But Jesus went on to clarify. Let's look at verse 36 again. Jesus answered, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would be fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from this world. The kingdom of the Son of Man is not an earthly kingdom, at least not at this point in history. An earthly kingdom built with passion and force. a kingdom from human intellect or energy. It's a kingdom of the heart, a kingdom of the conscience, a kingdom of heaven. Pilate double-checked his answer and said, "So you are a king." Jesus went on to explain, verse 37. "You say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I came into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice." Theologically, it's interesting when he says, "I was born," that shows the humanity of Jesus. He was human. There's a Christmas. There's a starting point for Jesus. But when he says, "I came into the world," that shows the divinity of Jesus, because he was the Son of God who came into the world. That shows the eternality of Jesus. You see, the Son of God is eternal. Jesus has a birthday, but the Son of God doesn't. The Son of God has always been, but he did become Jesus. Well, Pilate's not interested in philosophy or religion. When Jesus said he is the truth, that he is there to speak the truth, to Pilate, Roman power is truth. His legion is truth. His soldiers and their swords and spears, that's truth for Pilate. He's not interested in religious talk. He's not interested in philosophy. He just disdainfully says, "Well, what is truth?" And he doesn't even wait for an answer. He walks off. Pilate's satisfied. This Jesus character might be some kind of dreamer. He might be some religious figure, but he's not a threat to Rome. So Pilate walked back out into his courtyard where the Jews were anxiously waiting, and he made his pronouncement. "I find no guilt in him." Well, that's not what they wanted to hear. And then he moved on. Now, by this time, a crowd has begun to form around the priest. It's not just them now. A crowd has begun to form. We'll see why in just a second. And Pilate thought of an idea. You see, every year, as a gesture of kindness, he would release one prisoner, and the people got to vote on who that would be. They voted with their voice. And so he says, "Well, I have the authority to release one person at Passover time. So do you want me to release this Jesus?" And he was kind of snide in it. He says, "This king of the Jews." Well, the Jewish leaders had sort of anticipated that potential move. Let's look at the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15, verses 6 through 11. Now at the feast, he used to release for them one prisoner for whom they asked. And among the rebels in prison who had committed murder in the insurrection, zealot, guerrilla, insurrectionist, there was a man called Barabbas. And the crowd came up and began to ask Pilate to do as he usually did for them. And he answered them, saying, "Do you want me to release for you the king of the Jews?" For he perceived that it was out of envy that the chief priests had delivered him up. But the chief priests stirred up the crowd to have him release for them Barabbas instead. Now here's what happened. The chief priests made sure that the people in the crowd were all Judean Jews. The Galilean Jews, they sort of locked out of the courtyard. The Galilean Jews believed Jesus was the Messiah. That's the group that followed him into Jerusalem on Palm Sunday and put down their coats and palm branches and said, "Hosanna." Judean Jews, many of them followed the priests of the temple. And so it was easy to persuade the Judean Jews to ask for another person. And the person they asked for was called Barabbas. The word Bar in Hebrew means son of Abbas. Abbas means father. Son of, it's actually an Aramaic term, son of the father. And they didn't realize that they were turning against the true son of the Holy Father. But they were asking for a guy who had committed murder, who had led an insurrection against Rome. Here's a guy who actually is an insurrectionist. That's who they asked for. And reluctantly, Pilate had to agree because that was the deal. They got to vote who they released. So we move on to the story. Pilate tortures Jesus. Chapter 19, verses 1 and 6. Then Pilate took Jesus and flogged him. And the soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and arrayed him in a purple robe. And they came up to him saying, "Hail, King of the Jews," and struck him with their hands. Pilate went out again and said to them, "See, I'm bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus came out wearing a crown of thorns and the purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." When the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Take him yourselves and crucify him. I find no fault in him." Even though Pilate believes that Jesus is innocent, he's still a ruthless guy, and he orders him to be flogged. He's probably hoping that the punishment of the flogging would be enough that would satisfy the Jews and this whole situation would die down. So Jesus was taken to an area near the soldiers' barracks, tied by the hands to a low post so he had to bend over, exposing his back. Then two Roman soldiers with whips took turns flogging him. The whip they used in this scourging had a short wooden handle with several leather thongs attached, and each leather thong had a piece of bone or metal at the end of it. Whipping with this device was used to tear away the flesh, tear into the muscles, and oftentimes expose the bone. It was a cruel and bloody torture. For this reason, it was not allowed to be done to a Roman citizen. Many times men died from this scourging. Only a strong man could survive it. Jesus was such a man. We don't know how many times he was struck. We do know that in this, he fulfilled prophecy. Let's look at one of the prophecies. Isaiah chapter 50, verse 6. "I gave my back to those who strike, and my cheeks to those who pull out the beard. I hid not my face from disgrace and spitting." Jesus would fulfill all of that in this event. You see, after the soldiers were finished whipping his back, ripping it over, bringing blood everywhere, they sat Jesus down and wrapped an old soldier's cloak around his shoulders. The red from the old cloak was faded, gave a slight resemblance to the color purple, which was the color of royalty. Then somebody got a date palm branch and twisted it into a circle, made something like a crown. The spikes of the date palm can grow to 12 inches in length. He crammed that circle onto Jesus' head. The thorns dug deeply into Jesus' brow and made his face fill up with blood. There's actually a symbolism in this. They didn't know it, but there is. Look at the book of Genesis, chapter 3, verses 17 and 18. "And to Adam he said," God is speaking, "because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree with which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you." Thorns were a symbol of the curse of sin. What's placed on the head of Jesus? Thorns. You know, the scripture I quote a lot says, "He who knew no sin became sin for us that we might become the righteousness of God in him." Jesus was to take on us all the curse of sin. Well, the soldiers pretended to honor Jesus as king. They knelt down before him, and instead of saying, "Hail Caesar," they said, "Hail, King of the Jews." And instead of giving him the kiss of peace, they spit on him. They slapped him. They yanked his beard. They did all that other prophecy said would happen. It was a cruel form of jesting, showing their prejudice against the Jews. Can't really blame them too much. These soldiers are from Caesarea. They don't know anything about Jesus. They're there to have guard duty for that week in Jerusalem. They don't like being there. They're away from their base. And they're showing off their power against the Jews. So when all this jesting is over with, this cruel jesting, they take Jesus back to Pilate. And then Pilate brings Jesus out before the people. There he is, beaten and bloodied, a pathetic creature. And Pilate cries out to the group, "Ecce homo, ecce homo, behold the man." And he's hoping that that will be enough. I mean, look at this guy. He's been tortured. He's suffered enough. This needs to end right here and now. I don't find any guilt in him. This needs to be over with. That should satisfy you. But it doesn't. The chief priest says, "No, that's not enough. Crucify him. Crucify him." Pilate gets really irritated. He says, "Well, you do it yourselves. You do it yourselves." He knows they can't. "You do it yourselves. I find no guilt in him." He never did. He never did find anything wrong with Jesus. "I find no guilt. You do it." But the Jews weren't finished. Let's move on in our story to verses 7 through 11. I call Pilate feared Jesus. The Jews answered him, "We have a law. And according to that law, he ought to die, because he made himself the Son of God." When Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. He entered his headquarters again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate said to him, "You will not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and I have authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered him, "You would have no authority over me at all unless it has been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has the greater sin." When the Jewish leaders hollered out, "This man claimed to be the Son of God," well, that got Pilate's attention. Now, Pilate's not a religious man, but he is superstitious. And being a Roman, he's heard stories from the Greek folklore and the Roman folklore about demigods. Demigods are allegedly human children of gods and a human mother. And both the Greeks and the Romans believed in the idea of demigods. Somebody could have a halfway spirit of divinity in them because their mother had sex with one of the gods. And so Pilate is intrigued by this, and he's a little bit afraid by this. "Am I torturing a demigod? I might get in trouble with the great spirits over this." He's superstitious. And so he brings Jesus back in. He says, Where are you from?" Now, he really does know that Jesus is from Galilee. By this point in the story, Pilate's already sent Jesus over to Herod. Herod interviewed Jesus for about 15 minutes, didn't get anything out of him, sent him right back to Pilate. That's not included by John, but the synoptics tell us that. So Pilate knows he's from Galilee, but what he's really asking is, "Are you a demigod? What are you exactly? Where are you really from?" Jesus doesn't answer. He doesn't beg for mercy like everybody else would do. He doesn't argue. He's silent. That irritates Pilate. He said, "Don't you get it, boy? Don't you understand that I have authority to let you go and I have authority to crucify you?" And then Jesus speaks. And Jesus said, "You would have no authority at all unless it was given you from above." Pilate, you're playing a part in this. You're being an instrument in this. "You would have no authority at all unless my Holy Father had given you this authority. Therefore, the one who turned me over to you," that's Caiaphas, "has the greater sin." Now, Pilate, I'm paraphrasing, you're sinning. But Caiaphas is really sinning. You see, Caiaphas is the high priest, and his job is to represent the people before God and teach the people about God. And Caiaphas is doing the exact opposite. He's rebelling against God. He has the greater sin. That teaches us that there are degrees of sin. Some things are more guilty than others. But Pilate is still convinced that Jesus is innocent. He's innocent. He doesn't really want to know what to do with him. And so, he brings Jesus out to the crowd. He doesn't realize it. Caiaphas doesn't realize it. But Caiaphas is actually symbolizing the whole rejection of the nation of Israel. Let's look at John chapter 1, verses 10 and 11. We studied this in our first lesson on John. "He was in the world, and the world was made through him. and yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. And Caiaphas' action is demonstrating that very principle, that the Jewish people as a whole did not receive Jesus. Well, Pilate's convinced he must release this fellow. He's determined to do it. But the Jews have one more card to play. So let's finish up with verses 12 through 16. I call Pilate condemned Jesus. From then on, Pilate sought to release him. But the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you're not Caesar's friend. Everyone who makes himself a king opposes Caesar." So when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out, sat down on the judgment seat at a place called the Stone Pavement, in an Aramaic, Gabbatha. Now it was the day of preparation of the Passover. It was about the sixth hour. He said to the Jews, "Behold your king." They cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." So he delivered him over to them to be crucified. So they, his soldiers, took Jesus. Jewish leaders cried out, "If you release this man, he's claimed to be a king. If you release this man, you no friend of Caesar. You're not on Caesar's team. You're not doing what Caesar would do. And by the way, Pilate, we reported you once and you got in trouble. If you do this, we will absolutely report you again. And I'll bet you beans, Pilate, Caesar will fire you. He'll consider this to be dereliction of duty. You're letting a guy go who's committing treason against Caesar. When Caesar hears this, he will replace you, buddy. You want to keep your job, you better do what we tell you." So reluctantly, Pilate's forced into a box. His own history has created that box. So he brings Jesus out, and he sets him, and Pilate sits down on the bema seat. By the way, that means elevated seat. And Gabbatha means elevated. And the pavement, the stone pavement that's in front of it, our archaeologists have actually found that room, the stone pavement that's in front of that seat. And that's his judgment seat to render an official verdict. And one more time, Pilate tries a gesture, and he says, "Shall I crucify this guy, shall I crucify your king?" He's still being a little bit snide. And the high priest hollers, "We have no king but Caesar." As high priest, he's saying, "God is no longer our king. The Lord is no longer our king. We have no king but Caesar." That's what he's saying. And Pilate gives the order to the cross. And his soldiers grab hold of Jesus to begin the march to the cross, the Via Dolorosa. And that's where we'll stop today. Next week we'll have section 3 of the Passion of the Christ and talk about the cross. Hate to stop it right there, but that's where we have to stop for time's sake. But as we do, let me just spend one more minute give you three quick application points about Pilate. You see, Pilate began all this by trying to put the responsibility on somebody else. At the beginning, he said to the Jews, "You judge him according to your own laws." But you know what? No one can deal with Jesus for you. You have to deal with Jesus yourself. Pilate went on and tried to compromise. He had Jesus scourged, and he was hoping that that punishment would be enough, that that would gain some sympathy and pity among the crowd, and this whole event would be over with. He didn't want to make a judicial decision. He tried to evade it. But nobody can evade a decision for Jesus. Every person has to decide. In the end, Pilate made one final appeal. He brought Jesus out after the flogging and hoped for pity in the crowd. He thought that he could evade it, and he can't. And we can't either. Every person has to decide what am I going to do with this fellow Jesus? Am I going to accept the claims he made about himself? Or am I going to turn away? There's no middle ground. In the end, Pilate chose to abandon any sense of justice. He gave Jesus over to the mob because he was consumed with his own worldly ambition and his preservation of his job. He didn't have the courage to do the right thing. I pray that we will have the courage to do the right thing when God speaks to us. Facing eternity, the truth about Jesus matters. Let's bow for prayer.